Hello, everybody. Warren Smith here, and I'd like to welcome you once again to the Ministry Watch podcast. On today's extra episode, have a conversation with Eric Metaxas. You know, 10 years ago, Eric Metaxas was, you might say, the belle of the evangelical ball. Indeed, his evangelical bona fides were nearly impeccable. Early in his career, he wrote for VeggieTales and worked for Chuck Colson. He wrote humorously but piercingly about Christian apologetics. His biography of Dietrich Bonhoeffer was named the Book of the Year by the Evangelical Christian Publishers Association, and it's gone on to sell more than a million copies and has been translated into 20 languages. His keynote address to the National Prayer Breakfast in 2012 became a viral sensation and elevated his profile even further. With great wit and rhetorical flourish, and with President Barack Obama sitting just a few feet away, he made a passionate defense for the unborn. Eric Metaxas was becoming what many evangelicals claimed the movement needed, an intellectual Christian, someone who took the Bible and doctrine seriously, but who was taken seriously himself in the secular public square. Then Donald Trump happened. After being initially skeptical of Trump, as you will hear him say on today's conversation, Eric Metaxas has pivoted and become a full-throated advocate on his then-new Salem radio program, which is now syndicated nationwide. He wrote two children's books about Donald Trump. And in an infamous incident caught on video, he punched an anti-Trump protester at a rally at the White House in August of 2020. Eric Metaxas has gone on to use his radio program as a platform to have guests who promoted the notion that the 2020 presidential election was stolen, by the way, a claim he reasserts in our conversation today, and that the COVID vaccine is dangerous. His advocacy has also gotten him into some legal trouble. Just last week, a judge ruled that a defamation lawsuit against Eric Metaxas and others can go forward. All of this has caused a lot of Eric's former friends and admirers to ask, what happened to him? It's a question that Eric addresses, at least in part, in today's conversation, a conversation that starts out talking about his 2022 book, Letter to the American Church. It's a book that has recently been adapted to film and is showing mostly in churches around the country. So, Eric, hey, first of all, thanks for being on the program. I've been trying to make this happen for a while, and we saw each other at NRB, and you grabbed me by the shoulders and said, we will do this, and you're as good as your word. Here we are. So thank you.
Oh, for crying out loud, of course. Yeah. Of course.
And I want to begin. I've got like a lightning round of questions, Eric. So many questions I got for you. But let's start with Letters to the American Church. You know, basically, one of the themes, one of the big ideas there is that the American Church is not on a good path right now. You explicitly compare the church to or America to Nazi Germany in the book and in the video, in the movie. Talk a little about that comparison and why you think it's valid.
Well, I think it's very hard for us whenever we bring up the Nazis or Hitler, we immediately think of the end game, the death camps and how evil Hitler is. But you have to go back to, let's say, 1933, before most Germans and before most German Christians had any clue where this was going. A very small group of Christians kind of had the discernment to say, we know that the National Socialists are, you know, talking a good game about God, blah, 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 but they are the enemies of the church. They want to gut the church. They want to crush the church. They want to silence the church, but they're not stupid enough to say so. They're going to talk a good game. And so many German Christians were fooled initially by the Nazis. So it's very easy for us to say, oh, how ridiculous. How could they be fooled? Well, they're human beings, and some of them are naive, some of them are fearful, whatever it is. So where the German church was at the beginning, 1933, was a place where Bonhoeffer made very, very clear that the German church had the power, the cultural power, to stand against the Nazis if they recognized the evil and where it was going and were willing to pay the price of sticking their necks out and speaking up politically. But Bonhoeffer also knew that the German church, kind of like the American church today, had some wobbly theology. They had this idea that Romans 13 means we don't get involved in politics, which, of course, as an American, we know that's preposterous. That when the slave issue was hot in America in the middle of the 19th century, you had many Christians on the basis of their faith saying we must do whatever we can to abolish slavery. And so we're going to push to vote for Lincoln. We're not going to say we don't have a view on this. It's not a gospel related issue. Of course, it is a central moral issue. I wrote a biography about William Wilberforce, who in the latter part of the 18th century, early part of the 19th century, not only was involved politically, he was a politician called by God to serve God in politics, to abolish this satanic abomination of the slave trade. And so we see that the idea that the Germans had in the early 30s, and which many American Christians have today, that we're not supposed to be involved in politics, it's confusing, and people get it wrong. So Bonhoeffer was trying to wake up the church to their obligation. We know that he failed. We know that by the time the German church, many of them realized what was happening, it was too late. He knew that they had a small window of about 2 years. So I do compare in my book, Letter to the American Church, I'm trying to speak humbly and soberly to Christians who would have ears to hear and to say, we are in a dramatically similar position, because the Germans didn't know they were getting this wrong any more than many of us know that we're getting it wrong. We're capable of getting it wrong. They got it wrong. We saw the results. Where are we now? Will we wake up before it's too late?
You know, Eric, I think a lot of people on both sides of the political spectrum can hear what you said so far and probably agree with it. I know I certainly do. You've mentioned Wilberforce, who is a hero of mine. Abraham Kuyper is another hero of mine, partly because he was also a journalist. And so I
quote him in almost every speech. And Chuck Colson, my hero, used to quote him in almost every single speech about, you know, we are not to, this is a big theme of mine, right? We're not supposed to keep our religion in a box. It's supposed to touch everything. We're supposed to bring our faith and biblical principles everywhere we can. And I think sometimes in the church, we have forgotten that the Lord wants us to do that.
No, I get that loud and clear, and 100% agree with you. Kuyper famously said that there, you know, not one thumb's width or not one square inch of all of God's creation, or of all creation of which Christ does not declare mine. So I'm with you there, but I've got to want to play a little bit of devil's advocate on that question. So how do you know, though, which side is right? I mean, you know, there are, I think, Eric, your position would be that, you know, progressive ideology, leftists are the ones that are taking us down the anti-biblical road. And yet, there are a lot of people that look at, you know, Donald Trump and see solidarity or see similarities to totalitarian regimes that are not unlike. Our mutual friend Roberto Rivera used to say in the Colson Center editorial meetings that I was in, that the first person to use to invoke the name of Hitler automatically loses the argument. So I want to be careful about that. But how do you know which side is the one that's taking us the wrong way in politics? Why not? I don't want to say not get involved in politics, but why not stand on biblical principles and try to draw both sides of the political argument to a biblical position rather than anointing one position or the other as
first
the
of all, there's no
position.
Such thing as one position. You have candidates. Okay, so when you have a candidate, you have to make the difficult decision. This is to me, the tragedy is that many American Christians have said, you know what, I don't like either of these guys, I'm not going to vote. And I think to myself, listen, folks, the scripture commands us to love our neighbors. So I have to do, Bonhoeffer talked about this a lot, I have to do the dirty thing of making a responsible adult decision for the future. And so if I vote for Donald Trump, I have not changed my position on adultery. I haven't changed my position on any number of things. It's a biblical, I'm supposed to look at the issues, right? And so what I have seen is that the Democratic Party of today, now there are many Republicans that are useless. There are many, people in the MAGA camp who say things or whatever that I would disagree with. It's not 1985 anymore. We're living in a day where the Democratic Party, the face of the Democratic Party is not Tip O'Neill. The Democratic candidate is not Jimmy Carter, a born again believer who maybe wasn't a great president, but his heart was clearly in the right place. We're now dealing with Marxist atheists, with globalists who are at war with the very idea of America or patriotism. They say, you know, to be patriotic in the way that George Washington or Lincoln or any president, you know, up until the last few decades, to be patriotic, oh, that's nationalism. And you think, what? I'm supposed to love my country. That doesn't mean I'm supposed to make an idol of patriotism or an idol of a candidate, but I've got to work that out. And my love of God should inform my love of my family. It doesn't compete with my love of my family. So we're dealing with now.
How do you know? How do you know? And how should we know? How should our listeners know that they are, in fact, not making an idol of their political involvement? What are some markers? What are some guides?
We're not supposed to make an idol of anything. So.
But how do we know we're not? I mean, you know, idol. The people that are worshiping false idols don't think they're false idols, right? They think
that's exactly right.
So how do we know? What are the things that would say to you, you know what? I have let politics become a false idol in my life.
I think it's the opposite. In other words, I think that we have Christians today making an idol of not being political. Like, in other words, if I have an ability to vote for a candidate who's going to put forth policies and personnel who are going to advocate for what I would see as biblical principles, the candidate might not be born again, or the candidate might not be. But the point is that we're supposed to vote for policy and for personnel. And we've made it very personal. Many people have said, I just hate Trump. He doesn't seem Christian or something like that. And I think to myself, wow, how has that happened? Because we have a duty to recognize the reality in front of us. I mean, what I'm saying right now is that in 1985, Tip O'Neill is the head of the Democratic Party. We've got good people on both sides. We differ on some stuff, but today we're dealing with open Marxist atheism. We're dealing with a kind of madness on the left we've never seen in our lifetimes. People put person. There are things on the left in America today that are staggering to me. When the president declared Resurrection Sunday the trans day of visibility, I thought, I've never in my life seen anything as brazenly hostile to Christians in America. It was staggering to me. And I'm just naming a few things.
Sure.
That you have people on the left that are at war with the idea that we should have a southern border. And I think to myself, listen, because we have allowed literally millions of strangers to come in, you and I know most of them are good people looking for a better life. But if you don't have a border, you're opening the door to every evil actor in communist China, around the world, to get people into this country. Gangs, some of the most bloodthirsty, murderous gangs have controlled our border. Fentanyl is pouring in. We have to see this as a policy issue. And people have basically said that, I don't care about that. I don't care about politics. If you're commanded to love your neighbor, you're commanded to care about, you know, women and children being sex trafficked over our border. So these things become political, but they're ultimately moral issues. And I think that the boogeyman of Donald Trump, or somehow he's authoritarian, point out to me his behaving in an authoritarian way. People say, well, he seems authoritarian. If I see actual authoritarianism that's at war with the Constitution, I go to war with that. I don't see it. Where I do see it is on the left. I see the Democratic Party has weaponized the FBI against patriots, against Christians, against people who want to pray, against pro-life people. That to me, Warren, is so staggering. We've never seen it in America before. And so I think that we simply have to be realistic. It's not just about, oh, I don't want to vote for somebody that, you know, might say things or might do things. We're talking about policy and personnel. And I guess my issue is, I think that the church has a responsibility, just as it did in Nazi Germany, that if you look the other way, evil wins. You have to get into it. You have to look at the stuff and to say, well, I'm going to take a third way. I'm not going to get involved politically. That ultimately becomes a cop-out.
And on what basis, Eric, do you say it becomes a cop-out? I mean, why isn't a third way maybe a moral way? I mean, and I'm not talking about a mushy middle. I'm not talking about, you know, a William Barber progressive, you know, kind of, you know, religious left. I'm talking about one that remains faithful to biblical ideals, where we do what Jesus did when he held up the coin and said, render unto Caesar what is Caesar, but also render unto God what is God. Why is it not possible for faithful Christians to say a pox, as you know, Shakespeare said, a pox on both their houses? Yeah. And, you know, if we are going to truly because I think as a policy matter, Eric, I don't disagree with you in any way, shape, or form. I mean, I think we would certainly there would be zero daylight between us on, you know, gay issues, same-sex marriage, abortion, those kinds of things. But I do, you know, push back a little bit on the idea that we have to choose one or the other. I just don't see the choice as
it's an issue of discernment. If I mean, I'll give an example. In 2016, right? I live in New York City. I have watched Donald Trump for years. I didn't like Donald Trump. And I was ready to condemn him as a kind of a power monger and blah, 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 blah. That's where I was. But I kept looking. And eventually I thought to myself, wait a minute. He is saying things that it's a, you know what? It's a lot like Luther. Luther was speaking to, in a sense, to the people, and the people were going, that guy is calling out corruption. That guy is, what, no one's ever done that before. We're with him. Now we know, you know, Luther himself has a checkered story, but the point is that I remember thinking, gosh, Trump is advocating for stuff that I believe in. The only question is he full of baloney? Is he just blowing smoke to get elected? But more and more, I thought to myself, this is a guy who seems to have the fight in him, this kind of warrior spirit, to actually fight for this stuff. Because we've had a lot of politicians in the past who might believe what I believe, but then when push comes to shove, I mean, we saw it recently with Speaker Johnson, they're not willing to go to war with the dark side. They're kind of playing nice. And so I remember thinking, okay, well, it looks like Trump's going to be the candidate. Well, I guess it's pretty easy now. Well, I have a choice between Hillary Clinton, one of the most corrupt politicians in the history of politics, who is going to advocate fiercely for leftist progressive stuff, or Donald Trump. And you know what? We're going to have to take a gamble. But I know I can't vote for a candidate that is at war with the idea of the unborn as human beings. So we're going to take a gamble on Trump. So Trump gets in, says he's going to appoint justices who want to overturn Roe v. Wade. That blew my mind, Warren. No Republican had ever said that before. They always kind of danced around it. And we overturned Roe v. Wade as a result of this, you know, New York real estate developer getting in and actually keeping his word. Keeping your word is a biblical principle. So it's a little complicated for people who want to demonize Donald Trump.
Let me ask a couple of questions about issues that you raised, because one of the things you just said that, you know, Donald Trump was saying things that you believed in, you just wanted to make sure whether he was full of baloney or not. Given that, how do you feel about Donald Trump's, what some people would call a pivot or even a flip-flop on the abortion issue recently? He said that the Florida 6-week ban was terrible. He said that there should be no federal legislation banning abortion.
Do we have a candidate on the GOP side who is more pro-life than him, who's running for president in November? No, we don't. So you and I know where we stand on the life issue, and we're going to hold his feet to the fire on that issue. But I think that because he actually appointed three justices to overturn Roe v. Wade, and Roe v. Wade was overturned, it makes him the most pro-life president in the history of the Republic. And so to me, to focus on that is besides the point. We're dealing with stuff on the left that is so dark. You asked me before, but not vote for him, you don't get a pass. It means that if the other guy wins, you voted for the other guy. And that to me is the issue. If Hillary Clinton were to have gotten in, or if Biden gets a second term, it's essentially game over for this thing we call the United States of America.
Do you really believe that, Eric?
Absolutely am convinced of it. It's why I speak so strongly, Warren. If I thought, oh, we've got another 5 or 10 years, we can work it out. I have never seen America on the precipice. I mean, we're practically over the precipice. I'm seeing things in this nation I've never seen in my life. It's a staggering thing. We're effectively at war with communism.
So let me just get on the record here. If Joe Biden wins re-election, will you let me interview in 5 years, assuming America still exists, and say, Warren, I was wrong about that?
Well, what is America? I mean, we are already seeing our liberties being stripped away on a thing I never thought I'd see it in my lifetime. I never thought I would see parents having their children taken away because the parents have a biblical view of sexuality, a biblical view of male and female in Indiana and in other places. Parents are having their own children taken away in the United States of America.
Well, I'm not disagreeing that
staggering this could happen in America. So what do you have? In other words, is it America when the government is playing God, when the government is saying, you know what, you have no religious liberty, shut up, we'll put you in jail if you speak up, we're taking your child away because your child has been brainwashed in a public school to go along with this trans lunacy?
First of all, I agree with you that there are threats to religious liberty in this country. But if you talk to people like, you know, Kristen Wagner at Alliance Defending Freedom or Matt Staver, they'll tell you that religious liberty there's not been a better place for religious liberty now than in the last 40 years, just because there are groups like Alliance Defending Freedom and First Liberty and others.
Thank the Lord for the Alliance Defending Freedom. No one is a bigger champion of the Alliance Defending Freedom than yours truly. They are heroes. But the point is that they're fighting battles that we would not have dreamt of years ago. It's astonishing the evil that is being pushed. I mean, what's being pushed, Warren, it's an atheistic worldview. It is at war with the biblical worldview. It is at war. We're not dealing with the Democrats of the past. This is not Richard Gephardt and Gary Hart and, you know, people that even Bill Clinton in the 90s, he wouldn't have dreamt of going where they have taken us today.
No, I understand that. Listen, Eric, I know we've got a limited amount of time, so I wanted to pivot just a little bit in our conversation and not talk about specific policy issues, but more about process, about how Americans and how Christians should think about these issues. And I wanted to ask you about Tim Keller a little bit. Tim Keller wrote the introduction to your Bonhoeffer book. And, you know, he died, what, a year and a half ago now. So it's been, you know, so he saw a lot of this. And I'm wondering, and I know you at one point in your life at least considered Tim to be something of a mentor, you know, as evidenced by the fact that he did write the introduction to your Bonhoeffer book.
Of course.
Did you ever have any conversations with Tim about these issues? Would Tim... It seems to me that Tim's position and your position might have deviated over the last 3 or 4 or 5 years.
I write about that in the book, Letter to the American Church. I touch on that the world changed, but Tim Keller kind of remained stuck in, you know, the 1990s in terms of things. Like, you know, when we say, well, you know, the left says this and the right says this, but the gospel says this, that's a powerful rubric, right? But things changed so dramatically that it was no longer, you know, the left says this, the right says this. Now it's like the Marxist atheists at war with everything we believe in say this, and then the flawed right says this. Well, I guess I have to go with the flawed right because they're not at war with the founding principles of this nation. They're not at war with the idea of this nation. They're not at war with all the biblical principles that you and I agree on. So that's where Tim Keller, I think, ultimately was naive. I have tremendous respect and love for Tim Keller. He's a hero. But on this stuff, I think he got it wrong. I think, you know, Warren, what you asked me before, if somebody doesn't vote, evil men and women are going to get into office and they're going to harm human beings. The Lord has commanded me to love my neighbors. If I care about the poor in America, I have to hold my nose and pick, you know, you can call it the lesser of two evils. But the point is that I have to be responsible, because if I pretend like I'm going to sit this one out, that's what the German church did in the 30s. They said, we're going to sit this one out. You know what? It'll be fine. It was not fine. And again, in 1933, 34, you couldn't really see where it was going if you didn't want to. You just say, we're just going to do church. And there are many people, they just want to do church. They just want to praise the Lord. But the Lord has called us. He's commanded us to love our neighbors. He's commanded us to advocate for the poor. So when you say, well, I'm not going to vote, we have a vote. In the first century, they didn't have political power. The Lord has given us this gift of self-government and political power. We, the church, have been able to lead this nation. This nation wouldn't have come into being if not for believers. There's no doubt about that. I've written about it. This nation, we would have not ended slavery if not for hardcore Bible-believing Christians. We would have not ended Roe v. Wade if not for the prayers and the political action of Bible-believing Christians. We have been given this gift, and we have to use that gift. And to say, well, I'm nervous about him. He sounds this or that. Show me the policies. Show me the personnel. We have to be responsible, because our kids and our grandkids are, they will not have the America that we grew up in. It's already effectively gone. We have to get it back. And that's simply, I think, where we are.
Well, I think you and I are going to have to agree to disagree on that issue. I am not in favor of not voting. I mean, I vote in every election that I'm but I also believe that as a Christian, there's a certain minimum standard for leadership, and that if neither candidate meets even a minimum standard for leadership, I think it is a perfectly honorable choice to pick a third candidate or to write in a candidate. Or
it astounds me, though, that people say that with regard to Trump, he doesn't meet some standard. And I'm thinking he was president for 4 years. He did innumerable things that I'm applauding him on and applauding him on. So to say he doesn't meet some standard, JFK brought prostitutes into the White House just about every single week.
Just for the record, I would not have voted for him either.
Well, LBJ was a pig. Bill Clinton did things in the Oval Office. So this idea that, I mean, I'm trying to vote for somebody who's going to be the head of the executive branch. I'm not voting for a guy to be the pastor or whatever. So to me, it seems a cop out when people say somebody doesn't meet some standard. That's a total cop out. Show me who meets that standard. If you don't elect him, the other person's going to get in. And I guarantee you the other person does not meet that standard like crazy. And God's going to hold us accountable for allowing that person to lead this nation and for people to be dramatically harmed in this nation and around the world. That's just an adult responsibility I have to choose.
Well, I totally understand your position on that. You've been abundantly clear. I will say that I disagree with you on that position, but I don't think we're going to change each other's minds here. So let me move on, Eric. Let me ask you, do you pray for Joe Biden? Do you pray for some of these folks that...
It's kind of funny. We haven't talked about it, and I know we're out of time. I am convinced, and this is what breaks my heart, Warren, is I'm convinced that the 2020 election was actually stolen. And that is so horrifying to me that could happen in America. And that when you bring it up, many people say, shut up, we don't talk about that. That's what tells me something's wrong when we have that level of cynicism in our politics. And that is, it's a staggering thing to me, because when we talk about somebody like Joe Biden, I pray that I meet him in heaven, but his actions have been wicked, not just unacceptable, wicked actions over and over again, unbelievably pro-abortion, unbelievably hostile to Christians. And so I'm aghast that there are Christians who would say, well, you know, if he gets back in again, I think we'll be okay. I think it's naive. I think it's wrong. And it breaks my heart for the country.
Yeah. But you do pray for him.
Well, when I think of him, I pray for him. Yeah, I try not to think of him, to be quite honest with you, because it is horrifying to me that he's in the Oval Office. I mean, does anybody actually believe he's leading, or is this some group of people around him? He seems to me like a husk of a human being who sold his soul, you know, to be president. He's not actually leading, which is itself unconstitutional. How can we have somebody in the Oval Office who doesn't give us the impression he's leading? that's pretty disturbing that in America, we don't know, you know, if is the president actually being the president. That's unconstitutional.
Do you believe it was God's will for Donald Trump to be elected president of the United States?
In 2016?
Yeah.
I guess so. I mean, I don't, you know, like the Lord allows all kinds, the Lord allowed Stalin and Hitler to get into power. So I don't know. It's not so much about that. But I think that, I guess, let's just say, I think he's unique politically and he's the man for this hour. You know, time will tell which of us is correct about that.
Yeah. Right. Very good. Well, Eric, I know you're out of time, and I really respect and appreciate that, your time and your comments here. Let me just ask one final question. Anything I'm not smart enough to ask that you wanted to say about Letters to the American Church or about anything else that we have talked about today that maybe I didn't mean to cut you off, but I wanted to get in.
Listen, there's clearly not enough time. Look, I love talking to you. We've been friends for a long time, and I appreciate the open debate, because I think it's important and I don't get a chance to do this very much. I think my book, Letter to the American Church, I wrote that hoping to reach people that would disagree with me, hoping to say, is what I'm saying biblical, or is this just some partisan point of view? Let's reason together. Because what happened in Germany, good Christians in Germany got it wrong. I'm talking about good people got it wrong. And I know there are many good people in the church today who I believe are getting it wrong, but I believe that if they open their hearts and minds, that the Lord could change their mind and change their hearts and make them understand that I need to get in this fight. There's everything at stake, and the Lord has called his people to represent him in the public sphere. That is God's calling, I believe, on us as the church. The German church missed it with the most tragic results imaginable, and I believe that the American church is in that place now, and that's why I wrote the book, Letter to the American Church.
Excellent. Eric Metaxas, thank you so much for being on the program.
God bless you, my friend. Thank you.
Thanks for listening in on my conversation with Eric Metaxas. His latest book is Letter to the American Church. That book has been adapted to film, and it is now playing in churches and other locations around the country. The producer for today's program is Jeff McIntosh. We get database, technical, editorial, and other support from Casey Suddeth, Stephen DeBerry, Christina Darnell, and Kim Roberts. It's been great to be with you today, and I hope you'll join me and Natasha Cowden for our roundup of the stories that we've been following this week here at Ministry Watch. Look for that on Friday. Until then, may God bless you.